Okay, I'm going to go to some live questions because that way I get to hear some other people talk instead of just listening to myself talk. So if you have a question and you're dialed in, go ahead and press star 1. That will raise your hand, and I'll get to see the people raising their hands, and then I'll be able to call on you. Lots of times I'll be able to call on you by name if the caller ID is working. Sometimes I won't be able to. So go ahead and press star 1 if you've got a question. Okay, we'll go to our first one here. Hello?
Can you hear me, Jeff?
Yes. Who is this?
All right. I hope you hear me okay.
Yep, I can hear you. Who could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Walter. We spoke last time, too. And I have a question about price. And this is my third launch I'm doing. And the first one, I didn't talk about price until the very end because, you know, my instinct was telling me to kind of present the product first before talking about price. And I had little problems, not that many, little problems. The second time around, I talked about price towards the end, and I had a pretty big backlash of people that got upset because they couldn't get into the program. So what I do a 3-week free program, and then they can get into the coaching one thing. And there were a bunch of people that followed the free part, and they were very excited. And when the price came out, they got really upset at me because they couldn't afford it. But they didn't say that. They started saying that it wasn't worthwhile and stuff like that.
So, Walter, did they get upset that the price was too high, or did they get upset because they wanted it for free and they thought they were going to get it for free?
Well, the real reason was that they couldn't afford it at that time,
mm-hmm.
So they couldn't buy it. The what they said on the blog was that it was too expensive because I was making too much money. And didn't even say that much about the value, more that, oh, why don't you do it for less and have more people so you know, more people could afford it and you will make the same amount of money, stuff like that. I mean, it was nonsense, but
yeah. Okay.
That's what came out.
Yeah, well, basically, I mean, in this type of situation, there's always going to be people that want your stuff for free. There's always going to be people that, you know, yeah, they're looking for freebies, that think your stuff's too expensive. There's always going to be people that think they know how to run your business better than you do. The reality is that you're running your business. They're not running your business. You run it, you know, with numbers that make sense for you. I know when I was first publishing way back in 96, and before I was even selling anything, someone once said to me, you know, no good deed goes unpublished or unpunished. And I don't know if I always agree with that, but certainly when you're giving out great free information, you'll always attract certain people that, you know, they feel entitled. They feel like you should be their personal slave. You know, if you're sending them great free content, they'll think you should be sending them great free content on CD. If you send it to them on CD, they'll think you should be driving over their house and putting it in their CD player and starting it for them. I mean, there's always going to be some people that aren't going to like what you're doing. That's the reality of being a business and reality of being a publisher. Now, what you want to do with the pricing is just what you did. You always want to build the value of your offer before you disclose your pricing. Now, I wouldn't go, you know, if you have a situation where people think that it's going to be a freebie, that you're just going to give them free stuff forever, then I would change my marketing some. You know, even if you look at Product Launch Formula 2.1, when I did the launch, I said, you know, I'm going to give you all kinds of great stuff. I want to give you great stuff. This is how I always do my marketing, is give out great stuff. I'm hoping that, you know, by giving you free stuff, believe me, I'm a marketer. I've got something to sell down the road, and I'm going to be trying to sell you something down the road. But first, I'm going to give you a ton of free great stuff so you can make sure this is for you. And that's what I mean, you definitely want to drop that hint somewhere in your pre-launch. It's not, the pre-launch isn't about you being like the greatest person in the world and you're just going to give free stuff to the world forever just because you're such a great person. I mean, that's not what you want to do. So you want, I mean, and Walter, I'm not implying that you did this at all, but I know some people do, or some people think it's a, this is like some trick. You're like, the launch is a trick. You're trying to hold, you know, to appear that you're not selling anything, and you want to appear that you're just a great guy, and then all of a sudden you spring this trap on them. And again, Walter, I'm not saying you did this, but that's what some people think it's about. That's not what it's about. It's a, look at the way I did my launch. It's like, I'm going to give you tons of great free stuff. Yeah, down the road, I'm going to try to sell you something, but first I'm going to give you tons of great free stuff. And that model works really, really well. So the other thing, too, is if these people are going on your blog and saying stupid stuff, like you should be giving everything for free, or I really don't like the way you're doing your business, you really need, you should try selling it, like be like Walmart and sell at a lower price and sell more. You don't have to approve those comments. Just don't approve the comments. It's your blog. You're the one paying the hosting bill. You're the one that paid the programmer to set it up. You own it. You don't have to put their comments up there. So if someone's just posting stupid comments like that, just don't approve the comments. So that's, yeah, there we go. Hope that helped you out. So, John, I'm going to try to take over here and see if this works for me, but I bet you I think we're going to have to restart my browser or something. Yeah, John, why don't you go ahead and unmute the next one. Hello.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Good. I have a quick question. If you are...
Wait. Who are you?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm Allison.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
No
worries. Did I not have caller ID?
You do, but the last time I screwed that up once last call, so I couldn't buy their last name.
You're forgiven.
Yeah. I think it might have actually been you. Even.
Yes, it was. You called my last name first.
Yeah. Okay.
That's okay. The quick question that I had was, if you did the kind of quick shot over the bow, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
intro, and you don't see a lot of takers, like people aren't filling out the survey, what is the best way to handle it if at any point during the launch you don't see enough responses?
Well, I mean, if you're not getting the response, that means you're not touching people.
Okay.
And so, usually, really, when something goes awry, it comes down to the offer, yeah, especially on launch day. If it's not converting, it comes down to the offer.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, it's like sort of, since you're selling pre-launch, it's sort of like the implied offer. It's like maybe people just don't really care about that product, that topic, or the way it's being presented, you know, that story you're telling, they're just not connecting with that. And so you need to start adjusting that, you know, see if you can tweak that offer, see if you can find the hot spot that really does get people excited.
So you tweak it, you don't abandon it?
Generally, yeah. I'll definitely try tweaking it first, but if you can't hit it, if you can't get there, start to get some emotional response especially, then you abandon it. But you know, I'll definitely tweak away. And a lot of times, you know, you'll see a lot of times, especially like in this, there'll be launches, especially with real high-end stuff, where people will launch it and then they'll immediately, like, do a launch and have it open for 24 hours and then pull it off the market and come back 3 or 4 days later. And even if you look, I've done this repeatedly, and even with my clients, I'll do it repeatedly. A lot of times that's about tweaking the offer between the first open and the second open. You come out with it, and you try to, maybe you get blown away. And Frank, I've been lucky enough where, you know, I've pretty much been blown away every time we've done one. But I've done some launches, like with real super high-end, like coaching programs where I've helped people with, where we've come out and the response might not be as good as we thought. So then we tweaked it. We added payment plans, beefed up the guarantee, something like that.
Okay.
So, but, you know, where the stage you're in, I think you're still hunting and pecking for what's going to get people excited. And frankly, you know, not, you know, maybe you just don't have the right topic or something or subtopic. But try...
Well, they are responding because I did a sort of a New Year's message where I said, since you're a valued member on my list, I want to know what your biggest problem is in this area. And I did get quite a bit of response there.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. It's the more personal you make it, the greater the response is my experience. If I try to make it too official, people don't bite. And the minute you start just really being you, you get way more response.
Oh, totally. That's the secret, 100% right there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, well, before I go, so if you do have to abandon, so is your recommendation that you for the most part, take it all the way through and maybe tweak it after the first?
Well, I'd be tweaking in the pre-launch. You're hunting back in the pre-launch looking for what's going to get that emotional reaction, what's going to get people excited. So, if you're – and really, no matter – even if people are responding really well, you're still – that's what this whole launch is about. It's about finding those hot buttons.
Right.
So then you go back and hit those hot buttons in the pre-launch. That's totally what this thing's about. I mean, that's the product launch in a nutshell. Is it's giving you time to identify what the market wants and how the market wants to be sold.
Mm-hmm. And my second question is a quick one because I think you answered this already, but I just want to double check. So you do a separate – I have a regular blog. So you do a separate blog for the launch?
Generally, yes.
Okay.
And this can vary, but generally, yeah. Yep.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Next question. And so people, go ahead and hit star one. We've only got a couple more questions queued up here, so hit star one if you want to get your question in. Okay.
Jeff, Henry? We're going to go to Henry Evans next. Henry, you there?
I am. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
Good. How are you, Henry?
Great. Hey, thanks a lot. This is just a wonderful course. I'm getting more out of it every day. I'm listening to it.
Awesome.
I had a pretty specific question. I'm going to be doing my first launch later this month. It's in the weight loss arena, and I just wanted to ask you, can you talk just real practically how you had things organized when you were doing the launch, when you got a lot of things going on? I mean, I got the wall calendar up, and I mean, but did you manage this thing from a mind map, or did you have just stuff all over your desk? I mean, I'm just talking really nuts and bolts. How you did it?
Okay. Yeah. I usually start the launch with a mind map. And so I'll sort of mind map, and the mind map is usually functional areas and things to get done. So, like, I'll have the JV area, and I'll have ideas about where the affiliates are, how I'm going to identify them, who they are, how we're going to get to them. So I might have, a mind map, and it's, the launch. And then there's the thing about JVs. And off of there, I'll have, check this list of JV partners, check this list. And then I'll have, one for product and one for the sales letter. And I'll have sort of a functional mind map. And I'll start off with that. But to tell you the truth, I usually, once I get in the thick of it, I'm not going back to it too much. What we're currently using is actually the Google Documents in terms of managing a team.
Right.
And I'm not saying it's the best. In fact, it's probably like the worst, but it's just what I'm using right now. And if you could see how low-tech I do some stuff, people would be, like, shocked at how, like, oh, my gosh. But it works. And so, we'll do a Google Doc and we might have a spreadsheet, and we'll have a spreadsheet. We'll be managing all our JV partners, like who we're going to contact, who's mailed yet, who hasn't mailed, when they say they're going to mail, so what their contact information is. Then we might have another Google Doc, which is like a Word, and that could be just like to-do items for different people. We're constantly in contact via Instant Messenger because we're absolutely spread out everywhere. I'm talking like all around the world, and I don't have a big team. Even with multi-million-dollar launches, we're pulling this off with maybe four primary people and a few other ancillary people, but literally all over the world. And so we're using Instant Messenger. We're using and you can choose any platform you want. We're typically using Skype lately because it also gives us voice.
Right.
Although I think a bunch of them give you voice. Then when I get down into the it's funny, but I'm doing a lot of this on my handwritten journal, lot of notes because I've always got that with me, and I for some reason I never have abandoned the handwritten. I just really like that, and so a lot of times I'll have a lot of my notes about the launch in there, and then typically in the last week I'll shift to a whiteboard, a big whiteboard. And I've got, checklists there. And that's like the thing, I've still got it sitting 3 feet from me. I've still got my checklists all on my whiteboard, 4 foot by 6 foot whiteboard from, from the launch, you know, the PLF 2.1 launch is still sitting right here. And that's sort of the thing that really, I tell you, it's so basic. I mean, I'm using archaic, you know, stuff. You know, I think a great thing to use, I've seen it used in launches, is like Backpack for managing your team. You know, that's like from 37 Signals.
Right.
You know, that's pretty inexpensive group management software. But that's, geez, you know, and a lot of it, you know, it's crazy, but I've done enough of these where I'm juggling a ton of it in my mind. You know, now that doesn't scale when you start to step away from it and have your team doing it, but I'm still at that point where I really am very hands-on in these launches. And a lot of, you know, I occasionally will manage launches for others, and I literally do it once or twice a year, and I try to avoid doing any more than that, and people always wonder why they can't hire me, and it's because the launches literally do take over my life, and so much of it does live inside my brain, and really that's what this course is about, is trying to pour it out of my brain.
You ought to get like a high-end coaching and train people on how to do launches, and that when you get contacted, you can say, hey, talk to this guy or that guy.
That's the next thing you're going to be seeing coming from me. It's in the works.
Jeff Walker, certified trainers.
It's coming, because I know, yeah, there's so many people that want me to actually do the launch for them, and I can't, but we'll have a certification process very soon.
That's great. Could I ask you just one quick follow-up?
Sure. And so did that sort of, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was perfect. That was great, because I was just curious, like, how you transition, because I can see starting off on the mind map, and I'm like, geez, and you get to the day nut and bolts, and it sounds like you kind of move through a, you know, there's a formula that you have there that works really well. When you first started doing your launches and you were doing it all solo, how did you decide what to start outsourcing first? And I mean, was it just a matter of, I mean, I don't really like the web stuff, so I'm going to outsource that first?
Yeah. Well, it was just the first thing I did was the technical, because I just had no capability. And that was, let me step back from that. The first thing was customer service, and that was literally, you know, the first launch that I did that really hit it, in my opinion, was in the summer of '98, and I launched a newsletter that I've been publishing for free, and I took it to a paid subscription thing, and I did, I'm pretty sure, $34,000 in sales, and that was, you know, before that, my biggest launch was probably $6,000 or $8,000, so that was a quantum leap, and I think we... Oh, geez. I think we sold about 400 or maybe 500 subscriptions, somewhere in there. And all of a sudden, literally before that, it was me doing every single thing. Like, you know, if someone unsubscribed, I would be going in and manually unsubscribing them from my list. And I mean, everything. And so when we did that, it was like, okay, now I got a problem, because, you know, doing those credit cards was a manual process. I mean, I tell you, I'm just trying to express how archaic I have been. But, I mean, literally in '98, putting together a secure ordering process was like rocket science. And so we actually had people would enter their orders. The orders would still get sent to us via encrypted email. We would decrypt the email and then take their credit card information, enter their credit card information into a processing terminal.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Have that go through. Then we would add them to our email list. Then we would send them an email receipt, all 100% manual. And I had hundreds of these to do. And, you know, we sold them all within a couple days. And so that was when I got my wife and my son and my daughter. You know, my daughter's probably like 6 years old, but she's like old enough to do like little pieces of it, like take this piece of paper from this stack and put it in this stack. And so that was my first outsourcing, was to my family. And then, and I hope I'm not boring everyone by being too nostalgic here, but then the next step was, once we got, you know, figured out the whole secure order process, that's when I started to get help from Paula Galloway in making sure all my orders were working. You know, my tech systems got a little more advanced, and so I was paying Paul, you know, by the hour to work with me, and that was, you know, more in like the 99 range or 99, 2000 range. And so it was tech, because And then once I went to having joint ventures, then the tech gets more complicated. And so then I was working with Palqua, you know, more. He was more involved. And then that took us through the first version of Product Launch Formula, where we sold 600 copies. And then, of course, went to a physical product, and there was just no way I was going to do a physical product in-house. I mean, actually, some people counseled me to do that, and I thought about it for about a millisecond, but that's when I went to disc.com. And, you know, getting product production and getting it shipped is a no-brainer. Everyone should be outsourcing that. Unless you're doing quantities of, you know, 10 or 20 or 30. So that's a really easy one to outsource. And then, you know, shortly after the first version of Product Launch Formula was when we brought Betty on. And Betty, most of you have probably contacted one form or another, is our superstar in customer service. And so that was the next step. So it was tech, product fulfillment, customer service. You know, customer service is one that I think, it's customer service first, then tech, then product fulfillment, and then beefing up customer service. And then it wasn't until this really PLF2 where we started to add people to actually help build the site, and, you know, more like sort of a behind the scenes, smoothing out the rough edges on the product delivery, making sure uploads happen, make sure video gets encoded, make sure stuff gets sent out for transcription. Now I'm probably at the point, you know, I don't outsource marketing, obviously. I don't think anyone really should ever do that, to tell you the truth, unless you just find someone who's a superstar at it. But I'm at the point where I'm looking to start getting help with actual product creation. I've never done, you know, all the product creation is 100% me, but now I'm starting to see ways where I can outsource some of that. And so that's probably the next step there.
Great. Thanks so much, Jeff. That was really helpful.
Oh, you're welcome. It was a chance to go down memory lane there. Okay, John, do we have someone else up?
Yes, we do. Let's see. It looks like we have a 704 area code here. You there?
Hey, yes, I'm there. This is Tim from North Carolina, and actually Jeff just answered my question a few minutes ago, so I guess you can mute me off again, and I'll just keep listening.
Okay.
All right.
And I forgot, John, leave him here for a second. I forgot to mention that what we did with PLF2, the other thing, you know, I added John onto the team, and John's my partner when we help people, actually help other people do launches, but he's also my JV manager. So that's another, you know, another one of the early steps in that whole outsourcing routine is the joint venture management. A lot of that, like with the people I'm dealing with, you know, when you're dealing with, you know, Rich Sheffrin and John Reese and stuff, they want to talk to me personally. At least initially, until John developed the relationship with them, I wasn't going to have some JV manager call up John Reese and ask him if he can support me on the launch. It's going to be me. But there's a lot of other stuff, you know, behind the scenes stuff, like someone, hey, get me my link, or hey, I forgot my login, and also the JV recruitment, maybe not in the upper top tier, but lower down, where you know, a JV manager can really help you out quite a bit, because that does consume a lot of time and effort during a big JV launch. So that was another step of, you know, adding to the team. Okay, what else do we have?
Okay, let's see. We are going to a 415 area code number, so this would be Northern California, right?
Hi there.
Hello.
This is Lang, L-A-N-G, Lang Zerner. I'm actually calling from Boston, but I brought my cell phone with me here from San Francisco when I moved. Can't trust caller ID.
No, not always.
Hey, so I something you said on your previous answer, or previous answer, got me thinking about when you were talking about secure orders. Now, Yeah, I know that a member has some built-in ability to handle payment processing for subscription revenue. So, for example, for continuity sites, I've actually been setting something up like that. I've been taking Ryan Dace's continuity blueprint course.
Mm-hmm.
So, other than the obvious problem that you know, if you have a really successful launch, your servers could melt down. Is there any benefit to integrating everything into AMember versus having AMember for subscription or for, you know, for user management versus, you know, one shopping cart for payment processing? I mean, I've already got a merchant processing account for my web hosting and consulting business, so I can integrate that right into my site. So is there a benefit or a disadvantage?
You're asking a pretty techie question, and you know, I have a fundamental understanding of pretty much all this stuff, but I am not you know, I'm not a programmer, and also the playing field changes often. But this is the more you start tying different pieces of software together, I don't like to do that because it's easy to create some spaghetti code type system and where one thing's leading to another thing, and it's easy for, you know, one thing to break or one thing that you didn't foresee. So in general, I like to stick with fewer pieces of software. Now, one of the weaknesses of AMember used to be, I don't know if this is still the case, and this stuff evolves all the time, but it used to be that AMember could do the credit card processing for you, but then it would store the credit card numbers on your site, and then you're responsible for the security. If someone ever hacks into your computer, gets those numbers, then, you know, you got a big liability. Whereas if you tie AMember into one shopping cart, then those credit cards are stored in the one shopping cart servers, and you know, they're a lot more on top of, you know, they've got a lot more resources to dedicate to something, you know, to keeping something like that secure and encrypted. So that used to be the. Now I do some behind the scenes jujitsu stuff to get around that with my system, but it's all custom coded stuff.
Sure, of course. Yeah, I'm the questioning like about really tying into one shopping cart versus you know, how to, when I signed for your course, I believe that I went to a completely third-party hosted system for the payment processing, probably one shopping cart, I don't know, and got my, you know, AMember login info back, you know, or registration information back from an email.
Right.
So you know, I'm gathering you have a separate system for processing the initial registration.
Right, yep. We have a separate system. It's not one shopping cart. It's Synergix is the base of it, and that's Paul Galloway's software, but he did a whole bunch of coding in the background, a lot of custom stuff to do what we did.
Into your registration system.
Yep, exactly. And you know, nothing's perfect. There is no perfect system. And every one of them's got pluses and minuses, and it can be a headache trying to work through all this stuff. But, you know, AMember does give you a pretty solid, you know, end-to-end solution. The only problem is that whole credit card thing, and they, I know, are working on a solution to that. Basically, I think the solution ends up being getting authorized on .NET or someone like that, your gateway to store the credit card information. And of course, this is only for continuity. If you're not doing continuity, then you don't have to worry about storing the credit card.
You know, right, of course.
Then you just use it once, and then it's no worries.
Right, and then all you have to worry about is whether you're going to be able to handle a server meltdown.
But right.
I don't think I'm going to need to worry too much about it.
Yeah.
My list is less than 500 right now.
Yeah, you got no problems. With that kind of a launch, you could do off of a $7.85 account.
Yeah.
I mean, I did $600,000 launch with the original product launch formula off of a shared server. I mean, you can,
sure,
you know, until you get into something truly massive, you really don't have to worry about the meltdown.
Yeah. All right. And, hey, I just want to give you kudos for given the Google Apps and Google Docs a go, it's actually what my continuity programs all around is maximizing Google Apps productivity, and I'd love to check up with you at some point to find out how that's working for you.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. We've done some, I created on the fly a sales letter, you know, with having three people editing it while I'm writing it that, you know, ended up selling $3 million worth of stuff. And
yeah, it's a fantastic resource if you know how to use it.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you very much for your time.
Yep, you're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Okay, let's see. Looks like we have one or two calls left in the queue, Jeff.
Okay, sounds good.
So I am going to, let's see, it looks like it's M-A-I, so I'm going to assume it's pronounced, is it Mai?
Oh, that's actually my wife. It's Luca, Luca Yang.
Ah, okay. There you go.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi Jeff. Nice
Hi.
To meet you. Yeah, once again, great stuff. The main question I have is, where should I move forward with my business right now? I was kind of moving forward fast with the system and program. I actually, like some of the other people, I actually use it in conjunction with Ryan Dice's Continuity Blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a business coaching consultant program, and I'm trying to develop a mastermind program through the internet. And I'm also conducting expert interviews and stuff like that. And I pretty much set the site up through VTribes, but recently VTribes just got shut down.
Right.
And so, I mean, it was practically a couple months worth of work and wasted hundreds of dollars for nothing and kind of started from scratch now. And I have to go through the probably WordPress A-member route. And I was going to ask you, right now I only have about 250 people, and I was going to ask you in regards to that, how should I approach my business with this, and if you know of any resources. I was deciding between, initially it was a $47 price point just to get in for the content, and then a $97 price point to upgrade to, like, the mastermind sessions where we'll have, like, conference calls and, you know, stuff
mm-hmm.
like that and more in-depth stuff. And
mm-hmm.
so I was going to get your viewpoint on that.
Yeah, well, first of all, the whole VTribes thing, a lot of people, I'm sure, aren't aware, but there's this, basically, that was another membership software platform, and it was called VTribes, and basically they just announced that they're shutting down in another, I think is it the end of January?
Yeah, yep, end of January.
Yeah, so basically just in a few weeks, they are shutting down their service, and sorry.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And so it's just awful that they're doing that with that short of warning.
Yeah.
My gut feel tells me that someone's going to step up, whether it's a member or MemberGate, or someone's going to step up and say, hey, we've got a solution to your problem, you know. And, I mean, I think VTribe should be out actively searching for someone to take care of their clientele.
Yeah, exactly.
And creating a transition plan. I haven't heard that. But I'm certainly hoping something shows up in the next week or two.
Yeah,
it wouldn't surprise me if something does.
Yeah, they talked about something transferring the hosting, but I mean, the support and stuff wasn't too good. So I mean, I pretty much just got to start from scratch, and I was working through the Continuity Blueprint stuff, and I'm somewhat okay with building a WordPress and membership through A-member and stuff like that because I was just testing it myself. But I mean, it wasn't as in-depth as I wanted it. So, but, I mean, where do you think I should move forward with this from
well,
a price point?
I think the price point sounds good.
Okay.
I think 47 and 97 sound
uh-huh.
good. That just gut feel tells me that that's pretty good.
Okay.
I'd probably bill it as an introductory offer.
Okay.
And, you know, then, you know, you might end up testing a higher price down the road.
Okay.
Wouldn't surprise me if a higher price works, especially, you know, depending on how valuable, you know, if you build some real value into that mastermind, you might be able to get more than the 97.
More than the 97, okay.
Because when you start getting on the phone and, you know, working with people
sure.
in a mastermind type setting, the results they can see can be amazing, and so the value is probably going to be way beyond $97. So,
yeah.
Yeah, but it's a good place to start with. I would certainly think hard about creating some type of a launch event around the story of you having to, you know, rebuild the site.
Okay. All right.
I mean, that's just a natural.
Yeah,
just,
sure, sure.
It's a slam dunk.
Okay. Okay. Rebuilding. And then I have 250 people. Do you suggest that I should build it up to at least 1,000 to 2,000, or what do you think? Or should I keep it small and
Is the 250 paid or?
No, 250 opt-ins.
Okay.
Yeah.
At this point, if you want the launch, it'd definitely be a seed type of launch. It'd be, you know, you'd just be putting in a, you know, you'd probably be putting in 25 people.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, it wouldn't break my heart to launch there if you were doing it as a seed launch to help you create the product and help you create testimonials and case studies. Mm-hmm. But, you know, my gut feel would be, yeah, wait, build that up to 1,000 people before you do something.
Okay, okay. All right, I think that sounds good. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Oh, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Okay, is that it?
I believe that is all the calls that we had in the queue for any kind of questions there.
Cool. Okay, well, that's going to wrap it up. Thanks a lot, folks. Sorry we had a couple minor little technical difficulties, but it's always par for the course. And I'm sure when you do yours, you're going to have, you know, anytime you do this type of anything like this, you're always going to have some technical issues. Not every single call, but they'll happen. And the best thing to do is just stay relaxed and be transparent about it and know that, you know, the people are going to stick around for you. So that's a little mini lesson at the end there. Thanks for calling in. I appreciate it. I think people are getting a lot of value out of these calls, and part of that value is your interaction. So I appreciate that. And I'm not sure. Let me check my schedules real quick and see what we've got for our next call. Here, I think our next call is, let's see, we're in January. Today's the 6th. I think our next call is a week from tomorrow on the 14th of January.
That's correct.
We'll look forward to talking to you on the 14th of January. Thanks a lot. We'll get the recording up real quick for you. And that's it for call 5. Bye-bye.